Now that's an interesting transition, right? There we had this nice, peaceful song. And now we're looking at a picture of a child clinging to the back of a sheep for dear life. That wouldn't surprise me. Because guess what? It's a fan favorite at a modern day rodeo. It's called Mutton Bustin'. I mean, who doesn't think it's adorable to have a little kid clinging to the back of a sheep like a bucking bronco? What is interesting and what we care about is how do they get the sheep to run like crazy? I mean, when you take a bull, I don't know if you know this is how bull riding works, they actually take a leather strap, and you can see it in the picture there, and they go right around the bull's, right around their lungs, and they tighten it up, restricting the bull's breathing, which agitates the bull, and then they put weight on the bull's back, and, well, the bull is trying to get the weight off so it can breathe easier, and that's the reason a bull bucks the way it does. When it comes to a horse, or a bronco, as we like to call them, they put the man or the person, the woman, on the back of the horse, and they're wearing these things called spurs, and they dig those spurs into the horse's right here, and it drives the horse crazy. If you've ever had a rock in your shoe, you understand it's an annoyance. Well, this is beyond an annoyance. This is painful. So then they release the gate. What's the bronco trying to do? Get rid of the annoyance. But we don't want the sheep to buck, right? I mean, these are kids we're talking about. You don't want the sheep going all over the place. You really just want to get the sheep to run. So how do they do it? What's the magic trick? How do you get the sheep to run? Well, you'll never see it on the television. And if you don't pay really a close attention to it when you're at the rodeo, I actually had to go on YouTube and do a screen capture just to get a picture of this. The way they do it is standing in the middle of the ring is a person holding another sheep. And then when they open the gate, the sheep's entire goal is to run, stand next to the sheep that's already there. Because when sheep are afraid, they try to run and stand next to another sheep. So the sheep really doesn't care about the kid. It's not trying to get the kid off their back. It's just trying to make its way to another sheep. And with that, I began to think, sheep, they are extremely odd animals. They are needy, they are weak, and they're fragile. They are needy, and they're nervous. If you've ever dealt with a sheep in your life, and I've only had one sheep experience in my entire life, and there's a reason it was only one sheep experience in my entire life. Sheep, they're problematic, and they're difficult animals. They have a mind of their own. They're not these little adorable, Mary had a little lamb, and they followed him. They're not really that. They are difficult creatures to deal with. And by the way, I don't have a slide point. They also smell really bad. If you've ever wore a wool sweater when you're out and it rains, and then you come in and you're wearing the wool and it's soaking wet, and you just want to pull that thing, just remember, that animal is covered in that stuff. So, and they don't take showers or baths. So when that wool gets all wet, and they smell terrible. There's no other way to talk about sheep. And whether we like it or not, these characteristics of a sheep, that's exactly how the Bible describes us. Psalm chapter 100, verse 3 says, Know that the Lord is God. It is Him, it is who makes us, and we are His, and we are His people, and the sheep of His pasture. The good news is that God knows what we need and desires to give us to be that for us. The Lord didn't adopt us as His sheep and we caught Him by surprise. He wasn't expecting to have a pet that He could take home and, you know, feed and it climbs up in the bed with Him. And he knew who we were. The moment He came to give His life on the cross, He knew who you were. Even though it happened thousands of years ago, he could look across time and he knew exactly who you were. That is the reason that Jesus calls himself the Good Shepherd. John chapter 10, verse 11. I am. Those words are important how you start that sentence out. I am the Good Shepherd. Now, before Jesus said those words, though, we had Psalm 23, which kind of ties in nicely because I don't think you're actually allowed to do a sermon series on Psalms without stopping in Psalm 23. Everybody here has probably heard this. If you've been to a funeral in your life, you have heard Psalm 23. But today, we want to take a little closer look at it because it's not a funeral hymn. I know a lot of times we have those things in the hymnal that when we sing them, we think those are funeral hymns. No, they're not. There is no such thing as a funeral hymn, and there is no such thing as a funeral sermon. This particular thing is talking about the way in which God shepherds his people. It describes attributes of God that we can rely on. And when we are feeling our most sheepish, so when you're having those moments that your life just feels like it's falling apart, this is your psalm, folks. Because this can tell you something about God that you just can't find anywhere else. So if you want to grab a copy of the Bible sitting in front of you in the pew rack, or if you brought one with you, you can go ahead and make your way. We're going to do a systematic walkthrough of Psalm 23. Nothing fancy. Nothing outrageous, just kind of simple. We're going to talk about the Lord is my shepherd today. And, well, we start off right there in verses 1 through 3. The Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He refreshes my soul. And this is important. Because God is a good shepherd, he'll make sure we have absolutely everything we need. Remember that four-part person I keep telling you about? The fact that you are not just what you see in the mirror. You are what you see in the mirror as far as your physical appearance. But you have an emotional part of you. You have a mental part of you. And you have a spiritual part of you. And those four parts come together to make who you are. And when we start right here at Psalm 23, it's kind of interesting. God says, hey, I'm going to meet your physical needs. I'm going to make you lie down in green pastures. Not I'm going to lead you to green pastures. Not I'm going to show you green pastures. God said, not only am I going to get you there, there are going to be times in your life where you'll be like, I don't want that, God. God said, I'm going to make you lie down in green pastures. Why? Because you need to. You need to eat. You need to have nourishment for your life. And God said, I'll make sure you get that. And then he goes into the mental side and he says, you know what? You're not going to lack for rest because I'm going to lead you beside quiet waters. Not the rushing river that I make my life into. Not the tidal waves that I definitely make my life into. Not the things that I seem to drown myself in. God said, when I'm your shepherd, they're going to be quiet waters. They're going to be peace places where you can come and you can find a little rest for your soul. And well, he addresses here into this first little section here that he's going to approach that spiritual part. I'm not going to lack restoration. It says he refreshes my soul, which really means he refills my soul. So if you have a life outside of this building, which all of us do, by the time you leave this building today, hopefully you will take something with you that refreshes your soul. And along about Wednesday or Thursday, you're going to start looking at your tank and say, man, that which I got is all burned up. And so you come back here the next week to worship in the hope that you'll get something else to refill your soul so that the next week when you go out, imagine when you decide, well, you know what, I don't need to come into the presence of God and worship. You realize what you're trying to do is you're trying to drive the car with never filling up the gas tank. Or, I guess, in our modern-day world, you're trying to drive the car, but you never plug it in to recharge it. You can't drive a car like that forever. You drive a car like that, eventually it's going to leave you sitting on the side of the road. Because that's not designed, that is not the way it is designed to work. So that's three parts. We'll talk about that other part here in just a moment, the emotional part. But I do want you to see, he does this because he knows the nature and he knows our needs. That's an interesting idea. Do you know what you need? Okay, you can start making a list. I need the lottery numbers, right? That would make my life so much easier. I need this. We know what we want, okay? We have a very difficult time as people separating that which I want from that which I need. That which I need is if I take it away from you, you cease to live. If I take oxygen away from you, you got about 7 minutes and you're done. If I take food away from you, you got between 7 days and a month, depending on how much extra you're carrying with you when you get your food taken away. Take water away from you, you're not going to last that long. So we have things that we need. The problem is a lot of times we mix those things in that we want. And God doesn't say he's going to provide everything I want. He says I'm going to provide everything that you need. And Jesus kind of breaks the same approach when he looks at us in Matthew chapter 6, verses 31 through 33. He says, so do not worry, saying, what shall we eat? What shall we drink? What shall we wear? For the pagans run after these things. Your heavenly Father knows that you need them. But seek ye first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. In case you think Jesus didn't really mean this, he follows it up in just a chapter later in Matthew chapter 7, verse 11. If you then, though, are evil and know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father in heaven give you good gifts to those who ask him? And this is important for us because a lot of times we get in our life and we're like, where did God go? I don't have everything I want. You're not going to ever get everything you want. Because if God gave you everything you want, you know what you're going to do? You're going to make a new want list. Because my soul is never satisfied with just those things. See, we can be free from anxiety because we have a good shepherd who knows our needs and who knows how to take care of us. So let's talk about the second part. So the Lord is my shepherd. I'm going to lack for nothing. But then it says he's also going to be the leader. He's going to lead me. He guides me along the path for his name's sake. The good shepherd does not just feed the sheep. He leads them where they need to go. Think about that. So this isn't an all-you-can-eat buffet. This is not how the Christian life works, where you get what you want by you drive up to the window and you order, have like a Big Mac and an extra order, and an extra large order of fries. By the way, could you throw in one of those apple pies and the milkshake? And we order our order and we think that's how it works. God is not here just to give you your food. He's not here just to lead you. In providing for my rest, we already saw that he leads us by quiet waters. And again, he's leading us. He has much to do with our mental state. His leadership does not stop there. It says he will lead and continue us on all of our ensuing paths. You know what that means? We're never lost. Does it mean I won't feel lost sometimes? Oh, definitely. I'll have those moments. I'm like, I know I left God around here somewhere. I really did. He's here. I feel lost, but you understand it's because I'm not looking at God. He says, if you allow me to lead, you're never going to feel lost. And here's the part I really like. You are never alone. Will you feel alone sometimes? Sure you will. But you understand, if you're dealing with, you feel totally alone in it, that just means that you've got your focus off of something, off of the one that is trying to lead you. At times, the path may be hard, or even a little bit scary. But we can draw confidence in the soundness of the mind and the fact that, well, He goes before us. That's important. It's not like God says, okay, I'm going to lead you, and you just start down that road right there, and I'll tell you what, when you make a wrong turn, I'll give you a call and say you turned the wrong way. He says, no, I'm going to go before you. So I'm going to be out on this road in front of you. I'm going to be doing the same kind of life that you. I came here to live as a human, to experience all human things. I'm on the road in front of you. But here's the part I really like. He goes with us too. He's there walking side by side with me. And you know, I'd like to add a thought here. I personally believe that this is where things begin to go south in what we call being a follower. I mean, we're always looking for somebody to feed us, right? But seldom do we actually desire somebody to lead us. And the reality is that Jesus didn't just simply come to lead you, to meet your need. He came to lead your life. John chapter 6, verses 26 through 27, read this way. Jesus answered, "Very truly I tell you, you are looking for me not because you saw the signs I performed, but because you ate the loaves and had your fill. Do not work for food that spoils, but for food that endures to eternal life, which the Son of God, which the Son of Man will give you. For on him God the Father has placed his seal of approval." These are important verses because they're right after the two great big miracles. They're right after the feeding of the 5,000 and right after Jesus walks on the water. There they are. And I guess the good news is the people are pursuing Jesus at this point. But you know why they're pursuing them, right? Because that bread you gave me yesterday, Jesus, it's all gone. I went out and I worked hard and I went to bed and I woke up this morning and I'm hungry again. And so I'm going to go and, Jesus, you got any seconds for me? You got another magic trick for me? And it's important for us to remember this because he's not interested in just feeding us. He wants us to follow him. Because following him means that I will have more than just my physical needs met. And in listening to this idea, something we don't often read. John chapter 6, verses 41 through 42, when these people came looking for Jesus just for another meal, he let them go home hungry. Yeah, he did. Listen, John chapter 6, 41 through 42. "At this, the Jews began to grumble about him because he said, 'I am the bread that came down from heaven.' They said, 'Is this not the Jesus, the son of Joseph, whose father and mother we know? How can he now say, I came from heaven?'" Jesus, if you ain't going to feed me, I'm not interested in following you. And you know what Jesus said? Okay. If all you're after is a meal, you're going to be very, very disappointed in a long-term relationship with Jesus, because he will meet your needs and make sure you're never alone, you never go hungry, but he's much more interested in your spiritual life. He's much more interested in all four parts of you. And in that mental state we talked about, but we kind of skipped the emotions part of this, but he meets those needs too. Because not only does he make sure we lack for nothing, not only does he make sure he's leading us, he says, hey, I'm going to protect you. "Even though I walk through the darkest valley, and I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me." Sheep, slow and tasty. You know how that makes them? Dinner. A sheep all by itself out in the wilderness does not last very long. It is therefore important that, especially with domestic sheep, that the shepherd come prepared to protect the sheep. Much of the verses in verses 4 through 6 and Psalm 23 deal with our emotional struggles in following the shepherd. You see, as it works, on life's path, the first thing the shepherd must do is make sure the sheep feel safe. Because you know what happens to scared sheep? I'm not kidding you. They run in circles. That is all they know how to do. They don't know how to run away, They just run around in circles. And so that means if you're a smart predator, you just stand there long enough and the sheep will come right back to you. It's like a boomerang. They run in circles. And so the shepherd needs to understand, I have to protect my sheep. I have to make them feel safe. And therefore, the good shepherd has this idea. Protect the sheep at all cost. And well, to do this, we're mentioned two very specific items they're used. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. So we're not shepherds. I don't live out on a farm, thankfully. So what is this rod and this staff? We're familiar with these only because we talk about them a lot when we talk about Psalm 23. The rod is basically a bat. It's like a policeman's billy stick. And what it was used for was to ward off attackers of the sheep. So a shepherd, we usually think about them feeding sheep and taking care of sheep and shearing sheep. You understand that these guys were trained warriors. They could take a stick, a bat, and fend off a wolf. David said he took care of a bear. David even said he took care of a lion. And he didn't have a gun or a slingshot necessarily to do it. He had a rod, a bat, a stick that he's going to use, and he's going to protect those sheep at all cost, even if it costs him his own life, so the sheep can attempt to get away. So the staff was typically a shepherd's crook, and it was used to round up the sheep and discipline the unruly ones. So if you've ever seen a shepherd at Christmas time and they got the great big stick and they got the hook around it, and you see that, and you're like, why has he got a hook at the end of it? Well, the hook was made so that when the sheep began to wander off, he could take the hook and go whoop and pull them back in line. And it was a great big long staff, and if the sheep kept wandering away, you know, especially when it was a baby sheep, you know what the shepherd did with that staff? This sounds cruel. He broke the leg of the baby sheep. And then he would take care of the baby sheep and nurse the baby sheep back to health. And then this baby sheep would learn, you know what, first of all, that hurt. Second of all, when I am hurt, the shepherd is here to take care of me. So you hear about that, and maybe you think, man, that just sounds awful. But there's great comfort in knowing that there is somebody bigger than me that has my back, that is not only looking out for the things that attack me, but are looking out for me when I attack myself. You do understand in this Christian life, a lot of times you're your own worst enemy. You're the person that does the things that put you into those particular points. Unfortunately, we have adopted a spare the rod and spoil the child identity in our culture. And that philosophy begins to kind of spill into our spiritual life. We don't like God to discipline us, right? We're supposed to come here and feel good when I leave. Nobody wants to be held accountable. But we need to understand that God promises to protect us from the outside attacks and from ourselves. If you're following along in our Sunday morning Bible study, they are studying the book of Hebrews, and Psalms has a lot to do with Hebrews. When you told me that this morning, Gary, I'm like, yeah, I already knew that, because guess what? Hebrews chapter 12, verse 7 says, endure hardships and discipline. God is treating you as his children, for what children are not disciplined by their father? Then we go on in verse 11, and it says, no discipline seems pleasant at times, but painful. Later on, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. Folks, when it comes to God's discipline, I can't make it better. If God is disciplining your life and he's put you in timeout, I don't have a get out of timeout card free. I can't stop the discipline, but what I can tell you is you have to understand God is addressing you on your emotional level. He's trying to make you understand, I love you, I'm going to be there for you, and the good times and the bad times. I've said this before from the pulpit. When I used to be a youth minister, I used to look at my teenagers when they met me for like the third or fourth time and tell them, if you want me to care about your life, get ready. I shall care about your life. And you might actually get a little tired of me caring about your life, because it means I might come along and say, you're not doing that anymore. It's important that we understand that the good shepherd looks after every part of our life. And from that, the good shepherd blesses us. These are the parts we like, right? Verses 5 through 6, you prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. We love that, right? I mean, who wouldn't? It's got food and drink and party and all of this going with it. This is exactly what we want, but this isn't just a party. You know the only time that you eat in the presence of your enemies? When your enemies are defeated. So in these simple statements here, we get a picture of how God blesses us and does more than protect us. And he starts that off with the idea he blesses us with victory. So I've already got the victory won. The victory was won on the cross. The Bible goes on to tell us that in Romans chapter 8, verse 37, that in Christ we are more than conquerors. He tells us in the resurrection that Jesus is the proof that evil doesn't get the last word. Even when we think evil is running rampant, evil doesn't get the last word. In Revelation chapter 1, verse 8, it says that he has the keys to death and Hades, the very things that I fear most. He blesses us. He blesses us by letting us know that, you know what? That thing that you think has got you down, I got that. I know that. I've already beaten that. This fight, it's over. And you know what else? He blesses us with the idea of honor. You anoint my head with oil. So again, this is not part of our culture. This is not something that we necessarily get. But you have to understand, anointing with oil was the symbol of respect. Okay? So now you get the appearance that just as we saw in Psalm 8, God blesses, bestows glory on us, here too he is bestowing honor on us. That's important. A lot of times we don't think about it this way. We think God is like the guy that stands up here and he just wants to take all of our fun away, right? He's the parent that grounds us when everything goes wrong. He's the person that tells me to eat all my vegetables. He's the person that says, I can't have my dessert until I eat all of my vegetables. That's not God. God is blessing your life, not just with defeating those things in your life, but he's honoring you. He's respecting you. The long and the short of it is that we act like sheep, but to him, you're not just a sheep. You're not just a dumb animal that smells really bad. You're not somebody that can't figure out their life and he has pity on you. You're his child. You're his child. And if you're a parent, you understand what that means. If you're a child, hopefully you understand what that means. You understand their life is important to you, important enough that you love them sometimes in spite of the things that they're doing. Jesus treats us more like the father treated the prodigal son in the parable. Luke chapter 15, verses 22 through 24 says, but the father said to his servants, quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast to celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost, but now he's found. So they began to celebrate. Folks, we are not our weaknesses or our failures, like the world tries to tell us we are. We are exactly who we are because that's who God says we are. And he crowns us with honor and anoints our heads with oil. See, the shepherd blesses us with this thing called devotion. Again, like a parent to a child. This idea of devotion brings in the idea of loyalty. It brings in the idea of how things are supposed to work for us. And he says that we're going to follow you all the days of your life with mercy and loving kindness forever. You understand what that means, right? It means not only does God lead you, not only does God walk with you, now he's going to follow you, so now he's got your back. that means in the path that you're about to go to, God's there. In the path that you're currently on, God's there. In the path behind you, God's there too. Man, that's awesome. That is the very definition of those words, loyalty and devotion. Because we are God's children. One English professor said that he is like the hound of heaven. Yep. Constantly pursuing. Even when we walk away from him and forsake him, he doesn't forsake us. God's devotion will literally follow me all the days of this life and all the way into the next one. Never leaving me. I'm impressed. This is the Lord is my shepherd. He will never give up on pursuing us. So that means when I'm having one of my really bad days, God just sits there, I'm just saying, wait for him to come back. God's in pursuit. He doesn't quit on you. He just won't do it. He can't do it. It's not in his nature. Our sin and our selfishness just cannot exhaust God's mercy, nor can it weary his devotion. I'm a high-energy kind of guy. Guess what? I can't tire God out. Okay? I can't. He can go for eternity. I can go maybe 2 or 3 days. I can't tire God out, not even with my sin. But there is a catch. Yeah, you knew there was, right? For all of this to work, we have to be his sheep. Isaiah chapter 53, verse 6 says, we are like sheep, have all gone astray. Each of us has turned to our own way. The Lord has laid on him the iniquity of all of us. And so you need to understand, left on our own way, all sheep wander in search of our physical needs, our mental rest. We want to be completely fulfilled in our life, right? So I wander here and there, and I keep looking for everything that I think I need in my life. And unfortunately, this is how we get lost and alone. I'm trying to meet my own needs. And my soul is absolutely exhausted from this journey. I'm tired. What I need is I desperately need and want a shepherd. I want somebody that understands my needs. I want somebody that is going to be there when I am at my lowest point. I want to understand that, you know what? I've got to be a sheep. But not just a sheep. I've got to be his sheep. And that's my question for you today. Do you have sheep-like faith in this person that we call the Good Shepherd? His name is Jesus. He came to give his life for you, to die for you, so that you can have eternal life, and so that he can lead you through this life.